Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right and there's the Podfather, the great one, Doug Tonis. But just behind him is a legend in Bulls fandom. It is the great Big Dave Watson. How you doing, Big Dave? Welcome to the Big Red Bus. It's so good to have you on.
I'm good, Fred. How you feel, man? Doug, what's up, bro?
I'm living a dream as well, just recovering from the flu. And Dave, you should be proud because when we bring in Mark, Mark is always in the way back of the bus. Uh-huh. You got like just, you know, in the front of the bus status. So, you know, it shows the esteem that you have versus our buddy from Australia.
Well, that's only because I've known Fred longer. That's all. Like I was with him when y'all were recording out of a subway, like, and he was bringing me in to sit and watch the show with you guys. So no, I've been with Fred for a while, and yourself, Doug. I've been with you guys for a while, so that's how I got my seat.
I think it's a lot different than just that. It's not just because we've been with us longer, but we have very warm and fond and loving feelings with you. with Mark Kay, our friend from Australia, it's a lot more complicated, but he's still a good guy. But we prefer to banish him to the back.
Oh yeah, I get
for a number of reasons.
Don't stick me in this. This is you and Mark, Fred.
Yes, exactly. Before we get into any more side street tangents, I did want to get your opinion on the topic at hand lately. Big Dave, do you watch the nightly news, number one, and do you know who Cheryl Scott is?
I don't watch the nightly news, but I do know who Cheryl Scott is, yes.
Okay. Doug doesn't know who Cheryl Scott is. I think that was the gist of our last call. Doug, do you want to comment?
I still have no comment other than you're the most boomer person I know.
I have a pretty good reason why Fred is bringing her up.
Fred was pretty clear about it on the call last time of why he's bringing it up.
Oh, okay. Right on.
When did you stop watching the news? Is it something you didn't do? Or is it just, did you ever watch the nightly news?
Why would anyone my age ever have watched the news? Like the news?
You know, we're all relatively the same age.
Which again makes you like someone a generation older. Like the news was on the internet in 92. I get if you were a late adopter and you didn't get there to 2000, but 2000, you still were like 20. Like at 20, you shouldn't be watching the news at all. Why the hell do you care about news? You should be getting drunk. So like that doesn't matter. So you should be, no one our age should have watched the news. You should have been fully internet integrated before you ever watched the nightly news. That's all I'm saying.
Let's let Dave comment on this, Dave. You're saying at some point you did stop watching the nightly news, but you were formerly a viewer.
Yeah, my family, well, my mother in particular was a news person. So it was 5 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock, and the 10 o'clock news. It was always news on. And
same for me.
My brother, he's still like that. My older brother, he definitely watches the news. Both my older
John,
John and my other brother, Philip. They both watch our news people. They watch the news all the time. I stopped watching because when I would sit there and watch with my mother, it would make her sad. And I was like, well, why would I continue to, I used to ask her, why continue to watch something that just is making you sad? And she was like, I need the information. You know, it's informative. I need to know what's going on. And, you know, I didn't have any desire to be around anything that was going to make my mother sad. So that's why I quit kind of watching the nightly news, except for like the sports and the weather. Yeah, you know, I did it that way, but I knew how to get my news from, you know, other sources. It's a, you know, kind of a different world now, so I can get my news in other kind of ways.
So it's basically the same path that Doug took. It's a very similar path. It's almost exactly the same.
But shout out Cheryl Scott.
I know exactly what you're saying. That's all right. Sir.
Shout out Cheryl Scott.
There you go. What an incredible meteorologist or whatever they call it.
All right, now let's get into more important topics. I think I won that argument. I think that you gotta mark that up in my column. I bet though, Big Dave, what a year. First of all, hats off to you and, you know, Matt Peck for continually these shows. I mean, this had to be, you're really earning your salary, let's put it that way, in the last year and a half with this team just, you know, dragging us through just horrible, for the most part, viewing.
Yeah.
And the job that you guys do, I can't say enough stuff about it. We told that to Matt last Saturday at our event. That unfortunately, I know you came there a little later and we had to go a little early. Mm-hmm. But you guys do an incredible job, and along with the GOAT and obviously Will Perdue. But I don't know if you sense this. I sense this, and I saw it when I was a guest on your show. Mm-hmm. Do you really sense this dividing line in the fan base between the Giddey supporters and the Kobe supporters, and how venomous it's become, mm-hmm. and how kind of, I can't really call a similar situation. Do you agree with that?
I don't feel that as far as a divide between Kobe and Giddey supporters. I feel a divide to the extent that you like Josh Giddey. I feel like there is no middle ground right now, or people aren't allowed to have a middle ground. So I feel like people either feel Josh Giddey is the leader of the future, you know, future multiple time all-star, multi all-NBA guy who will, you know, lead the Bulls out of the darkness. And then I feel like there's people who just like, he shouldn't even be on this team. Get him out of here. He's trash. I'm a person that's in that middle that I'm talking about. Like, I didn't know enough about him to have an opinion on him. And now after I saw him for a year, I have one. And it puts me where the Bulls are. It's in the middle as far as how I feel about Josh Giddey. But I don't feel that divide between I'm either a Kobe guy or a Giddey guy. I haven't felt that one.
Doug, any comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, the Bulls definitely don't have any history of dividing the fan base between guards. It's almost like Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon, which you talked about 10 years after Ben Gordon left and Kirk Heinrich left. Didn't happen, and you've completely just like now forgotten about it. I'm with Dave, though. I don't think there's any venom between Josh and Kobe supporters. I think it is just like you either like Giddey or you don't like Giddey. And I'm kind of with Dave in the same boat of I don't really have a super strong feeling about Giddey, except that we're probably going to pay him more than I want to pay him. Like, I think Giddey, there's a price where I would like him, and I think we're going to pay more than that price, most likely. But until that happens, it's hard to complain about it, you know, like it, because it might not happen, right?
For the record, let's just go around really quick. What are you comfortable paying Josh Giddey? Like, what do you think he's worth? What do you think the Bulls will pay him? We'll start out with you, Big Dave.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, we did this on one of our mini pod discussions, and I went over the players who were getting about 28 million a year or less. And I feel Giddey is kind of in that category. And then I went over the guys who are getting like 30 million this year and up. And it was like a Drew Holiday, you know, kind of player. And I don't think he's there yet. As far as Drew Holiday, maybe obviously Holiday's a little older now, but he got that money, you know, previous to that. I think I'm comfortable starting the conversation right at 24. And I'm comfortable ending the conversation at about 28, and I can be pushed into like 28 and a half or something. But I would start that convo at 24 simply because I don't feel that that Giddey is operating from a position of power. I feel like the Bulls are, and I think they need to take advantage of that because they are usually operating from a position of weakness. And right now, Giddey does the main suitor will be the Brooklyn Nets, who could, you know, give him that kind of money. And I don't think the Brooklyn Nets are going to be looking at Josh Giddey. So he's a perfect fit here in Chicago for what they want, what they want to do. That half court shot will live on forever that he hit. And I'm sure he's comfortable here, especially with the Australian fan base and the people showing out and showing love for him here in Chicago. I think he's very comfortable here, and I don't mind giving him that contract. But that $30 million is definitely not one that I'm looking at to give him at all. But I would start the conversation for sure at like $24 million.
I was going to say, I feel pretty similar to Dave. I'd say for me, around $25 million is what I think he's worth. Could I get pressed into 28? Yeah, to be honest, probably not. I'd probably just draw the line at $25 million. He's got nowhere else he's going to go. The Nets don't want him. It's either that or take the qualifying offer. And I just don't really care if he leaves because I don't think there's a bright future with him anyway. I agree our front office will not fold because they're super invested in not being worse than ninth. I wouldn't have that similar level of investment in being so scared to tear down, you know, like a potential 44-win team, which is, I think, like the upside if everything goes really well. So that to me isn't like such an important factor, but I think it is very important to our front office. So I expect we will pay him $30 million or more. And we'll just negotiate against ourselves, you know, and that's it. So that's what I think will happen. At $25 million, I'm pretty happy with Giddey. I'm not doing backflips over it because I still think, you know, like he's such a hard guy to build around. Like every other roster decision is impacted once Josh Giddey is like your main ball handler. And so he does a lot of good things, but now everyone else, you know, you have no room anywhere else on the roster for guys to be deficient in things. And I think that just is a really hard place to start from when you're building a team.
I agree with Doug on that and what he's saying. And I'm glad he even mentioned the qualifying offer, because even during the season, I said when I said on the show that if the Bulls and Giddey can't come to an agreement, then they should offer him a 1-year deal. And people just absolutely went insane, you know, with anger and madness. Like, what does this guy know? He's an idiot. What is he talking about? And I'm like, yeah, y'all have to do the research and find out what I'm really saying here. Like, they're in that kind of position. They can really, for real, give him a 1-year deal and say, go prove it. They can give him a 1-year, $30 million deal and tell him to go prove it. And if he proves it, well, then we can have that conversation, you know, the next season. But again, this is what I'm talking about, operating from a position of power. They have to take that seriously and not just as soon as he walks in, you know, put a contract in front of his face. So, yeah, man, they
not our front office.
Oh, right. No, no, it's not their norm. You know what I mean? At all. They are always from that position of weakness, which drives me insane. But it's another chance where they can do it. Do I believe they'll do it? No, not at all. But they definitely can do that. And it's a good position to be in if you're a front office that wants to operate that way, that I think should operate that way.
Yeah, no doubt. Like the Bulls are in such a position of strength, and you brought this up, Dave, and you're absolutely right. I think they can absolutely negotiate a contract to $22 to $25 million with him. The only team that's a legit threat for offering him a massive deal is, you know, are the Nets. And if you have any competency in your front office, you should be able to feel it out and understand if they're legitimately interested in Josh Giddey. I don't think they are. So therefore, you have all the cards here. You can really push it down to $22 million. What the Bulls will do is I feel they're going to offer him $30 million for 5 years. It'll be a $150 million contract. They might go a couple mil below that, but with incentives, it would go over that just so they could have the win. Hey, we got this guy for under 30. Act like that's a big win. But when you keep on doing that every year, like you did with Patrick Williams, overpay by $5 million every year, it just kills you in the long run. I mean, just think about the last 2 years. Then if you give Josh Giddey $30 million, you can realistically sign him at 25. Patrick Williams should have been signed at 13, like Isaac Okoro was. And then you have 10 extra million to make a move with. And they just do it over and over and over again. So I think that's where we'll end up. I will, last question before we move off this topic. If the Nets, though, do offer him $35 million a year, you can make that case. Like, he played well enough from the All-Star break on that he played. You look at some guys like Emmanuel Quickley. I think he's better than Emmanuel Quickley. I'd rather have Josh Giddey than Emmanuel Quickley, and you should have a raise off of what Quickley was offered. If you offer him that contract, would you say yes? I kind of feel like you kind of have to if it's $32 to $35 million a year.
A year, like for like 5 years, like no, nah, bro.
4 years. 4 years. We'll say 4 year contract.
I still wouldn't do it. I'll be like, nah, man. Like if the net, I would play that game of chicken with you all day long. If you're telling me, hey, man, you're going to give him $32 million for 4 years, man, you know, God bless you. You know what I mean? Like, go ahead, do your thing out there in Brooklyn and see how much fun you'll have. Because, again, in my head, Fred, Doug, like, I don't feel like that the Nets would be like, yeah, we'll give him 32 and it will be a believable 32. You know what I mean? Like, I think if they do something like that and sign him, they'll get bored with that quick. And they'll try to get rid of that and make a trade or something. You know what I mean? With that, even if they, I'm saying after they play it out for you, obviously, but they would be like, no, nah, we want to make this trade. We don't want to do that. I would happily let it be the Nets problem over the Bulls problem for $32 million for nah, I can't 32 to 35. I just can't see myself doing that, man. Nah, why you feel they have to if they do?
I feel if they offer, let's say they give him the Quickly contract, which I think is $32 million a year, I still think the Bulls need to. You can't just let a talent like that walk for nothing over essentially $5 million. You know that you're forcing that decision. Kind of like the Bulls were when the Kings offered Zach LaVine, but that contract was still a good contract. I think it is possible for Giddey to play if he continues like he did from the All-Star break on. If he has a whole year like that, I think he's worth $32 million.
Yeah,
I thought he played that well.
Agree, you know, I agree with that. But I'm the jury is still out with how it was done, you know. And when they had to actually bog down and teams had to play them, like the Miami Heat playing game told me everything. In my opinion, like they weren't worried about Josh Giddey going crazy and doing his thing. They worried about Kobe White. And that's why Davion Mitchell was living in Kobe White's jersey in that game. Like they weren't concerned with Josh Giddey scoring 20 points, getting 9 rebounds and dishing out 8-10 assists. They weren't concerned with that because they knew that wasn't going to move the needle for the team. So that's what I'm looking at. What's going to move the needle for you? That's when I start giving you $30+ million. Do you move that needle or are we kind of just going to look good losing? And I don't want to look good losing no more. Like I'd rather bite that bullet right now and say, no, you can go to the Nets and then take my chances in the draft going into next season.
Yeah, I'm with Dave on everything he said. And the only thing I'll add, Fred, is you forgot about the player option. Of course, we're going to go $32 million a year with the player option on the fifth year. I don't know why you forget that we would have to give him the player option. Just because it exists in the contract, it's a possibility. So we'll fold on that one too. You know, we'll make sure if there's a way we can lose that we check all the boxes. I'm with Dave. Really, to me, over $25 million, I'd let him walk. Like, again, you give up what talent? Talent for what? Talent again? Like your upside, if everything works out great, is you're a low 40s win team. Like, what are you really costing yourself here? And then you instead have to rebuild around a guy who's not some weird platypus of weaknesses. Like, I don't want to say unicorn because that implies like he's got all these magical strengths, but instead he's got like two super critical flaws, and then every other starter has to balance out around those, and that makes the rest of your roster building just so difficult. And I'm fine just being like, all right, we're going to be a 25 win team next year. Like, we're probably going to have to do that at some stretch anyway to be good again in the future. We're probably not going to be good on the path that we're on, where we use up all of our cap room to have like non-star players. Like, you're going to have to do something else at some point. And Josh Giddey just isn't appealing enough of a guy to me where I want him to be paid like he's a top three player on a team. I actually did a little contract researching today for something totally different because I was just trying to win an argument with someone on the internet. I'd go down rabbit holes. And, you know, like $20 million projects to be basically the best like fourth starter in the league next year. So like around the 91st highest paid contract. And so, you know, if you go $25 million, you're projecting him to be like a middle of the road third starter. You go into the $30 million, you're expecting him to be like a middle of the road second best player on a team. Like, that's just not who he is. He's just not that good. And I get the way contract dynamics work. Like, a lot of the money comes in because guys are due money and blah, blah, blah. Like, and then you pay him and, you know, it's kind of weird, but like, I just would not pay this guy that much money. He's not that good. You aren't losing that much to let him go. And you don't need to hang on to being mediocre forever.
One thing I got to say is the end of the year, I think, really warped the entire fan base's view of reality and what this team is. And you mentioned the
hype. Sure warped yours.
It did warp mine to some degree. Not completely, but I've always stated this. Like,
most important game in Bulls history.
It was important for other reasons, which I don't want to get into now. Don't bring us down that rabbit hole.
Okay.
But you mentioned the Heinrich Gordon debate. My whole issue with that was, and there were games.
Oh, God. I should have never brought that up. 10 minutes of the show wasted now.
It won't be 10 minutes. It'll be like 30 seconds. In 2006, there were games where Ben Gordon was getting double-teamed 35 feet from the basket. That was happening in games. That never happened with Kirk Heinrich. He never once garnered a double-team from anywhere. Like, and when I say double-team, it's not like it's not a trap on a pick-and-roll. It's a, hey, he has the ball, and they're going to send another defender. That happened to Kobe White in March. There were games I can point to at the end of Miami Heat where they were sending a double with 30 seconds left on Coby White to make him get rid of the ball when he was player of the month in March. That doesn't happen with Josh Giddey. Number two, Doug and I went through those wins from All-Star break to the end of the year. They had two good wins, and that was against the Lakers, both against the Lakers, went on a miracle half-court shot. And how good were the Lakers? They were a first-round exit in five games. So big picture, like I do feel like we could be going back down this 14-9 Pat Bev period in Bulls history under Acme where, wow, we finished really strong. Things are good. And all this is still kind of clouded by how bad the East is. How many teams were actively trying to lose? How bad it's going to be next year? Like, if the Bulls really do try to win, let's say they keep Vooch and he has puts up another year like he did last year, Acme really tries to go for broke and win, I could see a world where we're like the sixth seed. That's how bad the East is. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility. We're still a billion miles away from a contending for a title. So I think that might even be a worst case scenario. But that's a road they'll choose, and that's a road we'll go down, and we'll have to live with that. Doug, you want to ask question number two? Or I could throw it out there, and it's up to you.
You might as well. I didn't pay attention to any of your text messages. I don't know.
Thanks a lot.
I know I was supposed to prepare and all, but yeah, like I can probably pull that back up. I know I have to make a reference to playing you for an ultra somewhere in here because you're really excited about that commercial. But
I don't know if those Michelob Ultra commercials irritate you as much as they do for me. Dave, what's your worst commercial in the NBA playoffs? What do you see that just makes you want to just throw your TV through the window?
You know, and it's, I don't feel bad about any of it, to be real with you. This is a question for my man, John Sabine. He always has opinions on commercial NBA commercials and what's the worst one and how much he'd rather, you know, gouge his eyes out than sit through some of these commercials, man. So I'm not the guy for that. None of them have really just stood out to me and just been like, I'm tired of seeing this. I'm just like, I think YouTube TV has kind of spoiled me for kind of this stuff. I'm like, I'm usually watching on like a 30-second delay, so I'll just skip them anyway. So it doesn't bother.
Dave, you're not enraged when during a Liberty Mutual commercial with a fake baby says Biberty and the guy sitting there reading the paper with the majestic Lady Liberty behind him and he's reading the newspaper? That doesn't bother you?
No, I mean, that's his character, right? It's to be the dumb dude, right? Like, so like, no, it don't bother me at all. Like, go get your check, young fella. Like, it's all right.
All right, maybe you're right. I want to have some believability in these commercials, but let's get back to the lecture at hand. What's one move the Bulls should have made in the last 3 years? One move they've made or should have made? Last 3 years, it still bothers you. It drives you crazy. What's the one that stands out,
dude,
that keeps you up at night?
I mean, that I don't know if it's just one. Oh my god! Like, you just hurt my brain with this. I just got sad. I just got really sad. There's so many. Like, I sat and yelled about what they should do, and they just refused to do it. I mean, that's why on the trade deadline show, I had a bat and I was clearing out the set with that bat, yelling and screaming because they refused to do things. The main one that always will forever make me angry is Alex Caruso, because of what you had. And you all have heard me say this a million times. I referred to him as rims on a car. Like, he's a luxury and he's what you get when your car is already ready to run. And, you know, you just put some rims on it because it makes it look really more amazing. You know, like OKC. OKC already had their car ready. So adding Alex Caruso, just put some real dope rims on some nitrous oxide or whatever you want to call it. It's a luxury. And the Bulls had rims on a car and had no engine, you know, and had no steering wheel and, you know, had no brakes. And they're concerned about looking good. So I was trying to trade Alex Caruso like 2 years ago. And they wouldn't do it. And then last year, I was screaming for them to trade him because of the offers that were coming in as far as like first round picks teams were offering for him. And they turned that stuff down because they just wanted to keep Alex Caruso. And then when you make the trade for Josh Giddey to the team with the most draft capital in the NBA and you walk away with no draft picks, it just blows my mind, you know, kind of how you could do that and walk away with nothing as far as, and nothing against Josh Giddey, because, you know, it has nothing to do with the talent. You're always going to get talent back, but it's about maximizing it. Did you maximize the trade? And you did not, you know, at all, from a team that had nothing but draft picks. So that's one of them. The other one that always blew my mind and made me angry was Andre Drummond, because at the trade deadline, Philly tried to offer the Bulls 3 second round picks for Andre Drummond, and the Bulls turned it down. And then in the offseason, what does he do? He goes signs a contract with Philly. So he left for the team for nothing, and you walked away with absolutely nothing for that. So they continued to do those kind of things, and they're doing it again. Like, you just saw him do it with Lonzo Ball, and it was reported that, you know, Memphis tried to give him a first round pick and throw Marcus Smart in, obviously because of the contract, throw him in there. Bulls turned that down, signed Lonzo, and then he's out for the rest of the year. So, and then that pick went to Washington. So now you give Washington two first round picks, you know, to deal with, you know, in this draft. So it's just upsetting that they don't value draft picks. They really truly value the players. This is just me reading the tea leaves and seeing what they're doing and operating, which makes me come to these conclusions, but it doesn't feel like they value draft picks, man. And for me, that is always, always, always a huge mistake.
I don't have much to add that Dave didn't add, except that I'll toss in for every year they've been here, I've said they should trade everyone for draft picks. like everyone. Like, after the 46-win season, my offseason plan was trade Zach and DeMar for 2 to 3 first-round picks each. Like, DeMar was coming off an All-NBA year. Probably could have got 2 firsts for him. Zach, at that deadline, there was rumors that we could get 2 firsts. We had a deal lined up for 2 firsts, and we didn't take it. So probably could have got 2. I also said trade Caruso that year, trade Vooch. At that time, I thought you'd get 1 first for him. And I just said, like, look, this team isn't anything. Just start over with, like, 7 first-round draft picks like you're OKC. So holistically, I would say that. The only point I would disagree
with, they traded 5 picks to
Dave on, and it's just like, I don't think we could have got another pick back from OKC. You know why OKC has a gazillion picks? Because they value draft picks. And, you know, OKC was just going to be like, well, you want Josh Giddey. Where else? Yeah, but they were giving up Josh Giddey. They're just like, no, we're giving up Josh Giddey. That's your value. We had a pick from Sacramento on the table, which was, I think it was like 13, if memory serves me correctly. And so it was like, we had the choice of Giddey or 13, and we wanted Giddey. Like, and OKC knew that. They knew there weren't any other bidders that were going to, like, trump them. There's better negotiators. And I don't think once we, like, were like, we have to get a player, we weren't going to get Giddey and a pick. You know, we could have traded Giddey for picks, but we didn't want to do that. And that draft class, like, was a little dicey, so I don't blame him for that necessarily at that point in time. The bigger mistake that Dave alluded to was not trading him earlier, which is also what I alluded to. Like, you should have traded him the year before when you're going to get multiple firsts on the table when you have multiple playoff runs in him, but you waited until now there's only 1 year left. And then the value had kind of, like, decreased a little bit. But regardless of, like, the slight nuance there of, like, I just don't think we're going to get more from OKC because I think they had a lot more leverage than is apparent. Like, everything else, I completely agree with. I understand the case. OKC had, like, a gazillion picks. Maybe they just fold, but I don't. So regardless of that, generally their undervaluing of draft picks is their big problem.
I just got to say this. The idea that we couldn't have gotten another draft asset out of that trade, your assertion that, well, that's because the Thunder won't trade draft picks, is completely contradicted by the fact that on draft night they traded 5 second-round picks to the Knicks for the 26th overall pick, Dillon Jones.
If you are butthurt about not getting a second-round pick, then I also just don't want to entertain or care about the conversation. Because, like, a second-round pick isn't going to move.
You should have got it.
Like, it just doesn't.
It does move, Neil. It's an asset.
It does not. We don't even have the roster spots for it. Either way, if you're just complaining that maybe they could have got a second, maybe.
Well, that's
again,
the point
you've
is.
You've not pointed out, you nor anyone else who makes this argument has pointed out any leverage point we had over OKC. The only thing you point out is, well, OKC had a lot of picks, so surely they would have given us one.
Doug, the leverage
that assumes
point.
That their general manager, stop, that assumes their general manager is not going to go hard on every negotiation, which is the exact opposite of what he's done.
Doug, the leverage point is that every NBA team in the league Bridges. That was contending, hold on a second. Every NBA team in the league, I just listened to the Hoop Collective today, and they were talking about the same point. There were multiple teams interested in Alex Caruso, as every team in the league would have been for a role player who plays defense like that. After the Celtics just won with 2 superstars and a bunch of Alex Caruso clones around them, that's exactly – there's so much
– all of whom are
there's so much interest
players.
In – there's so much – they had so much leverage in that asset – on a bargain contract for another year.
No one was giving him more than Josh Giddey. Once they wanted Josh Giddey, that was the value.
That's debatable.
He was a young player, It was a young player who was averaging like 20, 10, and like 8 or whatever it was like the year before. And that was like a guy who they viewed as maybe all-star potential.
Oh my God.
That's fine. But he was a starter. Who's a starter for almost
doesn't matter
time there. And he put up huge.
He just proved his value.
I'm not saying we should have wanted Giddey. I'm saying once we did want Giddey, we weren't going to get more. So yes, I think we should have gone for draft capital, and we would have got something different.
Giddey was worthless.
Once we wanted Giddey, there were. Well, that's your opinion, but that's not the opinion of our general manager. Once our general manager focused in on Josh Giddey, OKC knew they didn't have to offer anything else because there was no other comparable player that was in the market that was going to come back for Caruso with a draft pick as well. And that's why I'm saying OKC knew their position and they negotiated hard. And you've not countered that. You've countered, well, other teams wanted something, but none of them were going to offer you a high upside 22-year-old player. And that's how the Bulls view Josh Giddey, either correctly or incorrectly. And even now, all three of us are saying Josh Giddey is like a $25 million a year player, right? Like all of us said that. Well, Alex Caruso is a $20 million a year player. Like that's what he got in actuality. Like, so like we just weren't going to get a better current talent. We weren't going to get a better current talent than Josh Giddey. Like name the player. Like we needed a current player. Like that's how our front office operated.
A draft pick. You get a lottery pick. That's a fact. They could have got a lottery pick. That's been reported by the GOAT.
Yeah, and they didn't want it, Brad. That's 22. The point. They didn't want it. They wanted a win-now player who could produce now. And once they wanted that player, they weren't getting a pick two.
Oklahoma City is a smart organization. They would have thrown in additional draft assets if they would have played hard.
They didn't have to.
Yes, they would.
They didn't have to, and they knew they didn't have to.
No.
Because their counter was, we'll just go get Mikal Bridges, who's an even better player.
For five first-round picks?
Or someone else in the market. Who is the other player? No, the Bulls. Who is the player the Bulls could get? If they traded Alex Caruso, who are they going to get as a current player that is much upside and was young like Josh Giddey? Go research that player. Go find that player. You don't have to do it today because you're not going to. But go find that player.
Dyson Daniels. Pretty good player. There's a lot of players that were moved. Yeah, that was moved for DeJounte Murray. Look at how some of these teams leverage their assets and their mistakes. Look at how Atlanta did, getting DeJounte Murray, and they turned him into Dyson Daniels and two first-round picks. You look at what the Knicks paid for a similar player, albeit a better player. Mikal Bridges is a better player. Five first-round picks.
Yeah, because Caruso is not an offensive player. He's a 20-minute-a-game bench player.
He was the year before. He was over 40.
He was never a good offensive player in his career. Get the hell out of here. There's no point in his career he's ever been a good offensive player.
He started 72 games for the Bulls, and he was a very good three-point
player. He was a starter. He's not a good offensive player.
We're not going to agree on this. I think out of all our years together, you're so far off on this one. The fact that we should have been able to leverage it. All you had to do as the Bulls is say, thanks for the offer, Josh Giddey. Let them know, it's going to cost more than the guy who couldn't even play for you in the playoffs, who was literally a bench player as the season ended, who was at his lowest point in terms of value, and you couldn't even leverage one of those draft picks that you have too many to use. It's GM malpractice, and they could have done that because eventually, guess what? Oklahoma City is smart, and they know what Caruso was going to do for them, and he's done it. He's been huge. They got by Denver, arguably, because of him and his performance in that series. And they're smart, and we're dumb, and all we got was Josh Giddey and a massive contract. 1 year of a value. And even for 52 games, he sucked. Dave, I'm sorry. We went off on a little tangent here.
What you mean? I'm enjoying the hell out of this, bro. I'm enjoying this, bro. Like, y'all, do you think? But no, Fred, I do agree. I do agree with Fred on this one, Doug. I mean, I think the writing was on the wall that they weren't keeping Josh Giddey as soon as you bench this dude and you tell him that he's not going to be a starter anymore. Like, he clearly is not going to be coming off the bench and he didn't fit what they were trying to do. That's your leverage. That's the leverage the Bulls needed to operate from to get some kind of pick out of OKC because you knew you were trading him and I'm giving you a piece and Alex Caruso, who is arguably the most coveted piece in the NBA at that point in time, everybody wanted Alex Caruso. So if everybody's asking you to the dance, then yeah, I'm going to want more for it. It's like you're a father. You know what I mean? It's like both of you are fathers. If you know your daughter's worth and you're upset and a guy, you want your daughter to be with a doctor or lawyer or something like that. And she comes in and you know, she's with, you know, a guy who plays three card Monty, you know what I'm saying, all the time, you're going to be like, well, I feel upset because the worth was not maximized because I know what she's worth. I feel like that's kind of what the Bulls did. You have to maximize. And I understand that's your guy and you wanted him and you had to have him. And they probably did. And Doug, I agree with you. They knew the Bulls, you know what I'm saying, wanted that dude. But man, we knew you wanted Alex Caruso too. And we knew you wanted to trade this guy. So since we're both here, you're going to have to give me something extra for it.
All right, I'll give one small counter argument. You don't have to answer it. Sure. But my only counter argument. So I agree with everything you said, except that they didn't have 100 doctors lined up. They had like 100 guys lined up, but they all worked at Target. Like everyone wanted Alex
at least Caruso, they were managers. But, maybe they had managers.
But no one, I think they were cashiers, man. Like everyone wanted Caruso, but no one wanted to pay a lot for him. They all like Caruso because he's good for the money.
Yes.
Like, that's why they like him. They know he's a $20 million guy. He's good for the money, but he's not a give up like multiple picks guy for generally. And with 1 year left only. So I think that's the one thing. And then the other thing it says, there are not a lot of guys Josh Giddey's age who had his like statistical numbers who are ever available in a trade. And that's why I said like the Bulls, when they were looking for a guy that they could squint real hard and say maybe he could be an all-star, there just weren't other guys like that. And that's what they did. They looked at Josh Giddey. They squinted real hard and they said he could be an all-star. And there was no one else they could pick up that they were going to squint real hard and say he could be an all-star. And so once they got settled there, OKC felt like, hey, we have all the cards. And probably part of to your original point and both of our points, we just know Sam Presti is better than AK.
Yes.
Like you just know you're going to lose that negotiation because of the people involved too.
Yes, completely agree. Absolutely agree.
The move that irritated me the most is the Lonzo Ball re-signing. And I know I was alone on an island when it happened. Doug, everybody talked about, that's a good deal. $10 million a year for Lonzo. I can't find one tweet. Find me a tweet that says this deal was dumb. I just couldn't believe, after all we've been through with Lonzo Ball, regardless of what a great guy he is, regardless of the story, we're going to sign a contract and go back into the Lonzo Ball business. As I said then, and I was right, any argument that sounds like it starts with, if Lonzo stays healthy, you've lost the argument. And we passed up a first-round draft pick. In 1 year of a bad contract, which wasn't even that bad, $20 million. We'll take on Collins for $20 million. We'll take on Herter, but we won't take on Marcus Smart in the number one pick, which is now, I don't know where the Grizzlies are picking. It's got to be top 20. What a complete disaster. And as soon as they did that nonsense, I was out. I was fully out at that point.
The way you conflate those things is crazy. We took on Herter and Collins because we offloaded $150 million of Zach LaVine. So like financially, those were massive savings. They weren't taking on extra money. So like you got to compare apples.
No. They took on those contracts to get their own stinking pick back. That's why they did it.
To offload Zach's contract. They're salary dumping Zach LaVine.
There was no need to send out Zach LaVine if they had their pick.
They could have kept Zach LaVine, but they wanted to. They wanted to salary dump Zach LaVine because they hated him. So they wanted to get rid of Zach, and that was the best they could do because his contract was super expensive and hard to move. I'm just saying it's different. Like in that trade, we saved $60 million over the life of the trade. We didn't take on extra money. That trade is when we took on extra money is factually inaccurate. We saved $60 million. We didn't spend $60 million. Getting paid $20 million to take a first-round draft pick is not related to Lonzo Ball. Like, they traded Smart to get, like, nothing back, just expiring deals. They were just giving away the first-round draft pick to save the $20 million. Like, they didn't care what was coming back. That was a salary dump trade. I would still do a salary dump trade, but that's what it was. It was not to get that. They didn't get any assets back. They just dumped salary.
No. The asset back is what they did. Mentioned it in every press conference was we got our own pick back. That's what it was. And it allowed
him. I'm talking about the Marcus Smart trade.
Oh, the Marcus Smart trade.
And the Marcus Smart trade, Memphis, they just dumped Smart and they didn't get anything back. They just dumped Smart and they gave up a pick to save money.
Yeah. So
it wasn't about Lonzo Ball at all. Which is fine. Like,
well, they wanted Lonzo Ball. That was their point.
Maybe we can.
They wanted Lonzo.
Well, they would have taken him, but they would have taken nothing.
They just wanted to dump. They also wanted Lonzo because he was on an expiring deal.
But in reality, they did dump Marcus Smart for basically nothing except just getting his money off the books. They probably would have preferred Lonzo Ball to what they got.
That's right.
They would have taken Lonzo Ball. I'm not saying that trade wasn't on the table. What I'm saying was Lonzo Ball was not an important piece of it. The important piece was that they were saving $20 million. That cost was the pick to save $20 million. We have a bunch of expiring deals this year. I hope we can find similar deals where we trade Vooch, Herter, Collins, Lonzo. Like, I hope we trade all of those guys to take on extra money and extra draft picks.
Well, we committed to Lonzo.
I hope that deal is available.
In reality, we could have Marcus Smart at 20 and a draft pick. Isn't that preferable to Lonzo Ball? Yeah.
No, I agree with that. I would go back and do that too. I don't mind the Lonzo Ball signing if you separate it out from not doing that trade. Like, I agree that trade is better. I'm just saying I don't mind the Lonzo Ball signing for 1 year with a team option. Like, I think there's some interesting optionality that could come out of that in a trade. Like, I don't think it's necessarily likely. I don't mind the signing. I do agree with you on the lack of trade, though.
Dave, where were you in that 2020 draft? I just interviewed that's going to come out sometime in the next week. It was a really interesting discussion with Lacey James, who's been with the Windy City Bulls. He was with Toronto's G League team, the 905. And he was going into the whole situation that he was at Northern Illinois, and they were the number one seed in the MAC tournament, and COVID shut everything down, and how emotionally devastating it was for him, you know, to finally get a chance to play an NCAA tournament, likely, if they won that tournament, and get the automatic bid. And, you know, COVID shut it all down, and he was going through the whole process of talent evaluation. So I do give a little bit of a break somewhat after listening to that and describing, you know, a little bit about that whole process. But were you a Patrick Williams supporter? Like, I don't recall where you were in that draft. Like, who did you want the Bulls to take in that year?
I mean, going into the draft, I didn't know anything about Patrick Williams. He wasn't on my radar at all. All I knew about, obviously, it was the first three picks, and names like Tyrese Halliburton and things like that would be mentioned. And I knew that guy. I know I got Bulldog. Kevin Anderson definitely wanted Tyrese Halliburton. He was a huge advocate of getting Tyrese Halliburton. I think Matt and I just still had trauma because he went to Iowa State. And I think that's where I was like, oh my God, more Iowa State. We were a little traumatized with that. So I can't tell you that I was a Patrick Williams fan going into the draft because I didn't really know him like that. But after he was drafted and then I saw him play, yeah, I was all for him and all for Patrick Williams. And I was like, oh, this is an excellent pick what we got for this guy right here. And, you know, making an all rookie team on top of that. And then hearing, you know, when guys, what does it for you is hearing guys who are your peers who are like superstars at their craft talk about, you know, the talent that young man had. Cause I distinctly remember LeBron James. I distinctly remember Kevin Durant, and I remember Kawhi Leonard, who don't talk at all, you know, all saying something about Patrick Williams and, you know, just how solid they thought he was. And yeah, I was really a huge, huge advocate for him. And I mean, it proved to be, you know what I'm saying, not something that I should have been advocating, but who knew? But yeah, but I definitely thought Patrick Williams was going to be a good basketball player, really good basketball player here for the Chicago Bulls. He fit everything on paper that you look at. If you put up a silhouette of Patrick Williams, you would say that's what an NBA player is. Like, that's what it's supposed to look like. You know, this big 6'7", 6'8", dude with all these muscles who, you know, supposedly is supposed to have some athleticism, you know, looks like he shoot the three, like all of this stuff that he has to play a little defense, all this stuff that he had. And then, you know, I watched so much tape on him, man. And so much video of him, from college, off season stuff, all that stuff. And I was just waiting for something to pop. And it popped all right. It popped like, you know, your ACL or MCL would pop. And it just kind of went away. And it was sad and maddening. There's a, you know, there's an AAU coach that I talk to often. It was a really good friend of mine who was also big on Patrick Williams. Completely hates him now. And his main reason for hating Patrick Williams, he says, it's because he made me look bad. He was like, because Patrick... He was like, dude, I was so in on that dude. And I just really thought he had something and was going to be that kind of guy. Now, I think he needs to leave the Bulls. I think it's time for him to go, because I think mentally, I just seen a drop off this year that I haven't really seen before from an NBA young guy like that. Just a true just drop off. I mean, he wasn't setting the world on fire the previous year, but my goodness, he had one game where he scored 20 points, and that was game 78 of the season. So, like, it was just a true drop off for that young man. And when I heard Will Perdue on the show compare him to Brad Sellers, I really was like, oh man, we're done here. Like, there's nothing else to do. Like, we are done here. Cause before I might have wanted him, but now I wouldn't build a pillow fort around him, bro. Like I wouldn't build nothing around Patrick Williams, but I think he needs to go and get out of here. But yes, to answer your original question, I didn't know much about him coming in, but I definitely was an advocate for him after.
I don't know that I have much else to say about Patrick Williams. I mean, he's been beaten up a lot. The only thing I was never super high on him. I don't think I was ever super low on him. My general view coming out of the draft is I don't know a lot about the draft. So I have guys that I think I like, but I don't get deep enough in scouting to ever feel, you know, super one way or the other about him. So you just watch to see what happens. And the thing I've seen with Williams over the years is he just seems like he's just not a very intuitive player. He seems like an overthinker, a slow processor. Mm-hmm. And so he's just late on everything he wants to do. This last year, I think his athleticism was just way down. It's easy to maybe draw a parallel to that was because of the foot injury he had. It looked like he added some bad weight, you know, probably because he couldn't work out. Maybe he's a little depressed about playing super badly. Like, I don't want to psychoanalyze the guy, but definitely was not in the level of physical condition that he's been in the past and looks physically slow now. He never knew how to dribble. I never understood why anyone ever thought this guy was going to be a good offensive player, because he didn't even have the fundamentals of shot creation at any point. I could easily see in my draft view of him, like 2 months into his first season, was a really low ceiling player, but he's got a high floor because he looks like he'll defend and he looks like he can shoot the three. And so that's going to, you know, keep him on the floor in a really active way. And I just didn't see him ever developing anything else because he can't dribble. And if you can't dribble, you're like never going to be a high level option. And so, you know, now I still kind of feel like I don't see why he can't get back to being a 3-and-D player. You know, he's shown that he can shoot and he's shown he can defend at times, but his athleticism just needs to return. And I'm hopeful that, you know, this is like one of the first off seasons he's actually going to get to work all off season on his game. And so maybe with that, he'll build up some of that conditioning and athleticism back again. You know, but I think some of the injuries he's had has really kind of set him back too. So I'm not particularly high on Patrick Williams, but I do see a world where he can be a reasonable player in the NBA, like a reasonable role player in the NBA again. And some reasons why we saw that drop off last year, you know, kind of like fit into logically what was going on with his body physically. So whether he has the mental fortitude to now get back on track, you know, after being paid and rebuild himself like that, I don't know. He's not really shown a lot of that throughout his career. So not super high, but maybe not quite as low as the rest of the world.
I love his shooting overall until this year. I mean, hitting 40% from three is an indicator you put a lot of work in your shot, and you have put a lot of effort into becoming a better basketball player. But when it just comes down to just continual effort throughout a basketball game, I thought it was severely lacking as a rookie. I called him standstill P-Will. There was far too many moments where he was just walking on the court. He just doesn't play hard enough, period. You look at Dalen Terry, he plays hard all the time. And he doesn't have the skill that Williams does in terms of hitting a three-point shot, but he plays twice as hard. And that effort got a little bit better at some points in the last few years, as it was obvious that coaches and people close to him got on him for it. But it's still, to me, it's way too uneven and way too – you got to play with a maniac and intensity, and he doesn't even have anywhere near that. You look at these guys on the Thunder, all these guys coming off the bench that play defense, from Dort, Caruso, all these guys, all their second unit guys play so freaking hard. He doesn't do that, and that drives me nuts. But it's a hard thing to learn. It really is. I got on kids coaching. I've seen these kids and coaching these kids from, you know, with my son, who's now a sophomore in high school. I've coached a lot of these kids, and sometimes no matter what you say, it's hard to get that effort out of them. They're just naturally passive. And there's other kids that are naturally aggressive. And I think that's what eventually looks at effort. Did you want anything, Dave, before we go on to the final topic?
No, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. I think Doug definitely hit it on the head talking about how he processes very slow, because I've always equated him to a method actor. of somebody that needs to know his motive, that asks you what, you know, what's my motivation before they go into a scene. Like, he needs to know. And like, dude, you're playing burglar number four. And he's like, yeah, well, what's my motivation for this? And you know what I'm saying? Like, what's his backstory? Like, he needs to know every single thing that is so happening on the floor before he makes a move to do it. And by that time, it's done. And yeah, that I completely agree with you on that one, Doug.
Well said. That's a very interesting comparison and so accurate. Holy crap. Never heard that before.
Just hearing burglar number four makes me realize I've talked way too much on the show. Like, I definitely needed to shut up like way more. Like, this was the insights we needed.
Last question, because I do have a hard stop in a few minutes. Derek Queen. I think Derek Queen, you know, his measurables, as I predicted would happen, were embarrassing at the combine. Athletic measurables in terms of jumping ability, etc. I am like scared to death now. He'll be available, I predict, at 12. I'm scared to death the Bulls are taking him. And, you know, just because he's junior Vooch. You know, you could see him evolving into a Vooch, but just without the three-point shot. Are you high on Derek Queen? What's your take on Derek Queen? And, you know, I guess big picture, who do you like in this draft? Name one player that you're very high on.
Sure. I got the wonderful opportunity to go to the combine. So I was there a couple of days and watching all these guys. Derek Queen, I liked before. I was kind of in the middle on him, and I'm still there on Derek Queen. I don't think the Bulls should take him. Like you said, it would be getting a worse Vooch. And that's not a diss to him. I'm saying he's starting out that way. He can build himself up and get better for sure and do stuff like that. But yeah, defensively, he's just not that guy. But that dude is a bucket, man. Like, and that dude has a real special skill. Like, the word Goat kept using for him was special, even when we were talking about his flaws and through him. But he really has something, man. So yeah, I don't know if he'll be there. I think he might be gone, but if he is, no, I don't think the Bulls should take him. But the Bulls are in a position where they need talent and they need, you know, best player available option, in my opinion. So I could see a world, definitely. I'm not in the frame of mind right now to be like, nah, you know what I'm saying, skip on him, at least not that player. I think who I really, really want is Cedric Coward, is who I really, really want. And that dude is legitimate, and I think he is dope, and I don't think he'll get past like 15 or something like that.
Is this the guy from Washington State who committed to Duke? Who's,
yeah,
all right, I know this story. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I watched him at that con. I was sold. Like, just even speaking to him and listening to him, I was sold. Like, everything about him, I was really sold on. This is a 40% 3-point shooter. He's a catch and shoot guy as well. He doesn't need the ball, but the way he plays, he definitely has that I'm the best player on the floor mentality when he's out there. The 6'6" with, I believe, the wingspan is like 7'2" or something insane that way. But he plays hard on both ends of the floor. And can provide you with scoring and can provide you with defense and give you that wing that you just still do not have. And I think it's a great pairing, you know what I'm saying, with the guys they got in the backcourt and with the Modest Muzelis as well. So I would be happy to take him. I also have seen a world where, you know, Sorber from Georgetown was projected to go to the Bulls as well. I don't hate Sorber at all. It's just, for me, I really, 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 really like Cedric Coward.
Very interesting. Yeah, Doug, have you looked into Cedric Coward at all? I mean, his story is kind of amazing. What was the injury that ended the season? That was one question.
I think it was a knee. I thought it was a knee, if I'm not mistaken. He only played about six games before he got injured. But yeah, I believe it was a knee. But I can check real quick.
Yeah, I'm vaguely aware of him only because he's been talked about lately a lot. And my only thought was, like, he's a senior. So, yeah, he looks better than everyone. He's also two years older
than everyone. It was a shoulder. It was a shoulder.
Shoulder is less scary.
Shoulder, okay.
For sure.
Okay.
But that's it. Like, you're...
Yeah. Hey, guys.
All right, bringing the bus in.
I hate to do this. I got to jump off the bus. I think this might be the first time we ever do this. Do you guys want to continue for a little bit longer and without me? Well, I'll get off at this bus stop. And then you guys can... just a few more minutes if you want to. A few
minutes without you, Fred.
Otherwise, we could wrap it up. That sounds good. All right. I'm pulling the bus off to the side road. Dave, you take the wheel, please. And then this is a first for
it's not,
ever.
Not my bus, I've man.
Driven
this,
the bus.
This is for Doug.
No. God bless you. God bless you, Dave. I love you, buddy. Good talking to you, friend. Man. I'll talk to you again soon. All right, see you later, DT. Drop me off.
I have
here.
Amazing right, questions from Fred. I've looked up the list he gave me for you, Dave.